Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, August 5th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
An American research organization ranks President Robert Mugabe among some of the worst leaders in sub-Saharan Africa.
It would actually appear that's a bit lenient on him. Well, I suppose he's been saved by the likes of Mobutu Sese Seko and so forth. Mugabe would have been the 26th, if you ask many Zimbabweans.
A pandemonium continues at the Chingwizi transit camp, where dozens of people clashed with the police Friday following attempts to resettle them elsewhere following excessive floods in February.
And an earthquake with a magnitude of 5.3 hit South Africa today, shaking buildings in Johannesburg and killing one person in a nearby town. A pandemonium continued at the Chingwizi transit camp today, where dozens of people clashed with police Friday following attempts to resettle them at nearby plots. Yesterday, the villagers were forced to burn down their tents, which had been their homes since the beginning of February, when the Tokwe Mukosi Dam burst its wall, forcing them out of their homes. We spoke to one of the Chingwizi villagers, Milton Shumba, who gave us an update of what happened today.
Government sent to ferry people from the transit camp to the 1 hectare plots. Now, these trucks, they are very few. So what actually you can see, it is only that they didn't want the media to come and witness the what is happening here. You could see a lot of people carrying goods on their heads, women and children carrying goods from the transit camp to the one project, which is about 20 kilometers. So the situation is not just right. And most of the people, they are moving not to the 1 hectare plots, but to the original homes where we left from Tokwe Mukosi. Because they are saying the situation is just the same. It's better to go back to Tokwe Mukosi. And some are going to where they bought their homes. Because most of the people, they're waiting for the government to compensate them, then they go elsewhere.
That was Milton Shumba, a Chingwizi transit camp resident. Meanwhile, 29 people were arrested after clashing with the police last week. Today appeared before a Chiredzi magistrate. We reached human rights lawyer Zimbabwe Chimbwa, who says the matter was adjourned to tomorrow, when the magistrate is expected to make a ruling on the constitutionality of the case.
They were not properly before the court. And the argument was that they've been denied a number of constitutional rights that they entitled to. That include access to food, access to lawyers, access to medication some of them were taking. As a result, the argument was that they could not be properly placed before the court and should therefore be released. So the arguments were heard most of today, and the investigating officer was called to also testify to them as cross-examined on the key issues. So the magistrate has postponed the matter to tomorrow at 2 p.m. for ruling on that constitutional point.
We understand that some of them were severely assaulted. Could you confirm that?
Yes, that is part of the basis of the constitutional challenge, that you cannot use unlawful methods to arrest and bring people before a court of law and then expect a court to entertain that. And clearly beating up the accused person for whatever reason is considered unlawful in terms of the constitution that we have in place. And that was placed before the magistrate.
That was Zimbabwe Chimbwa, a lawyer for human rights.
And the rising death toll on the country's roads has prompted the Traffic Safety Council of Zimbabwe to issue a statement today urging motorists to exercise extreme caution to prevent the unnecessary loss of lives on the country's roads. This follows the death last night of 13 people in an accident involving a Zupco bus and a haulage truck along the Harare-Nyamapanda Highway near the Shamva toll gate. The Zupco bus, which was traveling from Malawi to Harare, veered off the road after sideswiping the truck and overturned before plunging into a stream along the highway near the Shamva Turn Off. Traffic Safety Council of Zimbabwe Product Development and Marketing Manager Ernest Muchena said the council is deploying teams onto the country's roads to sensitize the public to the dangers of speeding and related issues. He said 90% of accidents on the country's roads are caused by human error. The Zimbabwe Republic Police is also appealing to motorists to avoid speeding, especially at night. Investigations into the accident are continuing, a police officer told Studio 7.
The MDC formation of former Industry Minister Welshman Ncube says informal discussions for a broad coalition ahead of the 2018 elections are continuing with more political players coming on board. Party spokesman Nhlanhla Dube tells reporter Ntungameli Nkomo consultations with the different groups, including church organizations as well as labor, have been positive.
We started talking to other political parties, talking to other civic organizations, speaking to church leadership, speaking to youth organizations within students, and to the workers' unions of various forms, shapes, and sizes. And having done that, we then, of course, the Political Standing Committee wanted to hear from those cadres of the party who have been assigned the responsibility to do that engagement, informally as it was, to find out where the process had gotten to and what responses they were getting. The responses that we got were exceedingly positive, that all the organizations that they've engaged in, they are men within the cluster that I have mentioned, that are positive about this coalition of Democrats, who agree that there must be principles and values around which we coalesce so that we start a new narrative for Zimbabwe, so that our politics moves away from a simple politics of removal of WPF without an answer to the economic, to the social issues around health and issues around jobs, which needs to be tackled. We will understand that while WPF changed the government of national unity, the GNU, they did not have a template for what they would do after that, which is why they are failing to create the 2.2 million jobs, for instance. They are failing to deliver on health. They are failing to deliver on education. And in our view, the next generation of politics must be a new paradigm, a new ethos, certainly a new narrative, which accepts where we are coming from, where we are, and defines where we should go.
That was Ncube MDC spokesman Nhlanhla Dube speaking to Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
An earthquake with a magnitude of 5.3 hit South Africa today, shaking buildings in Johannesburg and killing one person in a nearby town. The U.S. Geological Agency says the earthquake was centered 6 kilometers east of Konki, a gold mining town about 170 kilometers southwest of Johannesburg. Emergency workers say a man in Orkney died when a wall collapsed on him. Mine shafts in the area were evacuated, but there were no major injuries reported from underground. South Africa experiences periodic medium-sized earthquakes. The same area was hit by a 4.9 magnitude tremor 2 months ago. The South African Press Association says today's earthquake lasted for about a minute and was felt in several cities, including Cape Town and Durban. There is a big Zimbabwean community in South Africa's mining towns. The earthquake was also felt as far as Botswana and some areas in Mozambique.
The government says it will build 30 magistrates' courts throughout the country after the Danish government, through the Danish International Development Agency, provided funds to the Judicial Service Commission for the project in a movement to strengthen justice delivery in the country. tenders were flighted today for companies to build the courts, beginning with Victoria Falls, Nkai and Binga in Matabeleland North, which all have makeshift courts only manned by one magistrate and therefore resulting in backlogs. Lawyer and former Cholocho magistrate Lizwe Jamela tells a reporter Standikile Mhlanga the move is welcome as makeshift courts usually result in delays in the delivery of justice.
It becomes a problem on the court arrangement system where we have the prisons, where we have the accused persons, where we have the gallery, like the members of the public wanting to access the court, and the arrangement in terms of the security of the court itself, like the magistrate, because sometimes it becomes a tiny room which is so crowded. Only one magistrate becomes seconded to such a station because of the space that is there. You may have a case going on for the whole day as a trial, and now all other cases that could be set for the day become an issue and they are postponed to the other day. And sometimes witnesses may come and maybe the following day or the following time they may not necessarily have means to even come back to court. Because when you're looking at these rural courts, we're dealing with witnesses who may be coming from a very long distance to come and testify. So sometimes it really have an impact on the justice system.
From your experience as a magistrate in Cholocho, how exactly is the backlog caused?
To comment from my experiences, which is a long time now, that was 2016. We had a court, one main court, where everything has to be done. We're talking about from civil cases to criminal matters, trials, initial cases that are coming for the first time. You are having a structure that is not supporting all other structures, like where you have your proper offices of the clerk of court to maintain the records and the proper office of a magistrate so that you have your space to be writing the judgments, to be dealing with other issues that could be dealt with in chambers. There's a time when you actually were two magistrates. You still have to wait on your brother or your sister magistrate to deal with their cases, which may take a long time. By the time you get into court, it's already sunset and it's supposed to be time for you to adjourn, and we have to postpone those matters.
That was Lizwe Jamela, lawyer and former Cholocho magistrate on the line from Bulawayo.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, you can find us at www.studio7news.com. You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
The U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, which started in Washington Monday, entered its second day today with focus now on the U.S.-Africa Business Forum. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu has more.
The nearly 50 African leaders in Washington hope the summit will bolster trade between the two continents to the level of China, whose trade and investment volume stands at $200 billion compared to the U.S.'s $85 billion. United States President Barack Obama will address the visiting heads of state today following their long-day meetings with business executives from America and Africa, where many hope to strike deals. There is little hope for any major deals for Zimbabwe, however, as President Robert Mugabe was not invited to the summit together with leaders of Eritrea, Sudan, and Central African Republic for their alleged human rights abuses. Godfrey Kanyenze, director of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, says President Mugabe's exclusion dashes hopes to improve the country's worsening economy.
It does have a huge impact for that matter, simply because Zimbabwe is not re-engaged with the international community yet. So as such, it is not yet out of this pariah status.
Economists, industrialists and labor experts are warning of a troubled 2014 for Zimbabwe as many companies slip into liquidation or judicial management, pushing the official unemployment rate to close to 90%. But Resource Exploitation Watch Chief Washington Mehlomakulu says the summit offered no solution for Zimbabwe.
Whether Zimbabwe does actually lose anything significant, it's very difficult to judge, because from what I understand, this is really a forum that allows change of ideas in terms of economic affairs largely. But beyond that, it's not really a trade conference where specific bilateral agreements are going to be signed. But I think what it simply does is that it continues to, you know, to harden the relationship between the Zimbabwe and the US.
Zimbabwe's Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister, Chris Muchangwa, said by excluding Zimbabwe, America was using its superpower status to sabotage Harare.
No, America is free to invite the people they want, and they didn't invite Zimbabwe, and we are not losing sleep over that. It's America's prerogative. In any event, we are one of the countries whom they unilaterally imposed the sanctions, a poor African country which has done no harm to America. It is on the sanctions of the most powerful country on earth. This is just an egregious form of expression of global power by the strongest country in the world. It's abuse of its dominant geopolitical position, and it's victimizing a small African country.
But former Zimbabwe diplomat to Ethiopia and international relations expert Clifford Mashiri, based in London, dismissed Muchangwa's remarks, saying Zimbabwe must look itself in the mirror and reform.
It will have a very major impact on Zimbabwe, although Zimbabwe will try very much to deny that it has lost out. The whole idea of being, you know, labeled uninvitable is likely to stick on ZANU-PF for a long time to come.
The historic summit is the first of its kind, featuring African leaders and an incumbent United States of America president. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, this is Blessing Zulu.
Thank you. Blessing is covering the summit for us with Gibbs Dube. Now we have Blessing on the line. Blessing, what happened today?
Today, President Barack Obama is expected to announce that U.S. businesses have committed to investing $14 billion in construction, clean energy, banking, and information technology projects across Africa.
Do you have any, you know, inkling about how the African delegations here are receiving this news that, you know, all these American companies are, you know, pledging to spend that much money in their on the continent?
It is good news indeed for most African states, because there were concerns that this meeting or summit might just turn out to be just a talking workshop without any action. But this commitment by the U.S. companies has shown that they are serious when it comes to doing business with Africa. And there are actually more than 90 U.S. companies that are participating in this summit, including Chevron Corp, Citigroup, Ford Motors, General Electric, IBM, Lockheed Martin, Marriott International Hotels, Morgan Stanley, and many, many others.
Blessing, we understand that cellular network provider Strive Masiwa is there. Has he said anything yet?
Yes, Mr. Masiwa says his Econet company has actually invested in infrastructure development in 17 African countries, and he also said that he's setting up what is called the fiber network. He has done this in 15 countries. He started in South Africa, moved it to Zimbabwe, Zambia, and now he's saying he's on the borders of Somalia. But unfortunately, because of the war in Somalia, he cannot go further, because he says Al-Shabaab has stopped him in his tracks.
And do we have any other Zimbabwean business person expected to talk?
No, it's only Mr. Masiwa, who, of course, was the speakers here, together with Mokta Kent, chairman of the board and CEO of Coca-Cola Company, Tepo Mashoele from Botswana, was also one of the speakers. And Masiwa is the only Zimbabwean businessman who took center stage.
Thank you very much, Blessing. It's very interesting to watch what is happening at the Africa, U.S.-Africa Summit. On Sunday, I attended an event where African leaders and experts were agreed on the need for the continent to negotiate contracts that benefit Africa and not investors on the in their countries only. Speaking at a meeting that was held ahead of the summit, African leaders said Africa should become more assertive when it discusses opportunities with the international investors. Let's hear more about that. Speaking in Washington, D.C. at the event dubbed Believe in Africa Day, ahead of President Barack Obama's three-day U.S.-Africa summit, African Union Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma said Africa is seeking new partnerships that will create jobs on the continent, allow Africa to industrialize and manufacturing to grow, unlike previous forms of investment that prejudiced the developing continent. Dlamini-Zuma said Africa wants investors to help train millions of African youth in science, technology, research and innovation, among other disciplines, to leapfrog development on the continent. Other critical areas of priority are agro-processing and infrastructure development.
We would like Americans and other business people to invest in Africa, but to invest in Africa in a way that will create jobs, that will allow us to industrialize and manufacture in Africa.
This, she said, will allow the continent to add value to its vast natural and mineral resources. Dlamini-Zuma said Africa as a continent is united on what it wants, adding efforts are being intensified to ensure peace prevails to aid development and growth.
As we look at what to do today and in the next 50 years, we are determined to silence the guns on our continent, to eradicate poverty in one generation, eradicate hunger, fragility and disease, transform our economies, and to preserve our environment.
The president of the African Development Bank, Donald Kaberuka, also spoke at the meeting, as did four African presidents of Guinea, Mauritania, Cameroon and Madagascar. Kaberuka said there is a fundamental shift in Africa on how the continent views itself, adding Africa should not rely on outsiders to develop itself.
I think the most important one for me is that we have to figure out how to finance our own development. It's absolutely important that those who have these vast amounts of natural resources now use these finite resources to create wealth. And you create wealth by training people, by building infrastructure. And this is what most of these countries are doing. I hope this week my sister will talk about also ensuring that African countries with natural resources get a fair share of those resources. That's been an issue that some of these countries negotiate contracts which in the long term are untenable because they're simply unbalanced in favor of the investors, and so the countries get very little out of the resources. So the other way we're going to finance our development is to ensure that investors get their return on their money, but also countries owning those resources get a fair share of those resources. Now, if we don't do that, the future generations will ask us, but what did you do with oil, with gas, with platinum, with copper?
President Alpha Conte of Guinea said that Africa did not trust itself, with some countries rushing to take advice from outsiders that he said was detrimental to the continent. The meeting discussed various issues, including business opportunities in Africa, the need to build strong partnerships with investors, and looked at the extractive industry. Meanwhile, the African Union Commission Chairperson, Dr. Dlamini-Zuma, officially opened Africa House, the new home of the African Union in America. She urged the African diaspora to work with the union and combine efforts to tackle problems facing the continent. More still with the summit, Chris, a lot is happening here. President Jacob Zuma of South Africa says U.S. President Barack Obama's skin color has influenced in his dealings with Africa, but could have done more by now by boosting the continent's growth. Mr. Zuma told a business executive meeting and civil society leaders and newsmakers at the U.S. National Press Club yesterday that President Obama has carefully used his African background to handle most African affairs.
It has influenced his dealings with Africa, partly because of what we have said, his background of the African descent. But as an individual, I would say that in itself has not helped to some degree, because many people had looked at it from that point of view. And therefore, it has made him to tread very carefully handling these matters. And I think that's a reality. I believe he could have done more, but I think he always was aware of this fact. And therefore, he has navigated that situation very well.
Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, a piece of legislation allowing them to sell goods to Americans without paying customs duty. The program that began in 2000 is set to expire next year. South Africa has already said its delegation will push for a 15-year extension of the African Growth and Opportunity Act. Indications are that billions of dollars in new funding is expected to be announced for Power Africa during the summit. The United States is expected to unveil nearly $1 billion in business deals, more funding for peacekeeping, and billions of dollars for food and power programs during the summit.
We meet during a difficult period in the Middle East. We are outraged by the killing of civilians by Israel, some in United Nations shelters. We also condemn the killing of Israeli civilians by Hamas. We call upon all sides to lay down arms and work towards a negotiated solution that will lead to the internationally recognized and supported two-state solution. We believe violence will not solve the Israeli-Palestine problem, but it is negotiations. It is compromises that people must make in a spirit of give and take for the sake of a bigger picture for the lives of their people.
That was South African President Jacob Zuma speaking yesterday at the U.S. Press Club. Still with the summit, an American research organization related to the summit, though, an American research organization has ranked President Robert Mugabe among the worst leaders in sub-Saharan Africa. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
As African leaders attend the U.S.-Africa summit in Washington for the second day running, an American-based research organization, Gallup, yesterday released its findings on the performance of leaders in the sub-Saharan region. Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita was ranked the best leader, followed by Botswana President Ian Khama, while President Mugabe was ranked 21 out of 26 leaders in the region. President Joseph Kabila of the Democratic Republic of the Congo was ranked number 26. The ratings were based on face-to-face interviews with people in the respective countries in the sub-Saharan African region. Editor of the News Leader newspaper, Itai Zamara, told Studio 7 that the findings were influenced by the country's poor economic performance.
It would actually appear that's a bit lenient on him. Well, I suppose he's been saved by the likes of Mobutu Sese Seko and so forth. Mugabe would have been the 26th, yeah, if you ask many Zimbabweans. I mean, if you look at the current national state, the current national situation in the country today.
Zamara adds that failure to deal with corruption has proved to be President Robert Mugabe's biggest undoing.
A case in point, just this year, they made a lot of noise about the so-called salary gates and what have you, which were trying to expose their dirty linen in public. But Mugabe's major undoing has remained that even when they realize where the rot is, he does not take the appropriate action, even when he knows who is stealing.
Political analyst and director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, Pedzisai Ruhanya, says the Gallup report is far from the truth, as South African President Jacob Zuma could not be regarded as worse off than President Mugabe. President Zuma of South Africa was ranked 25th.
Zuma is one of the best leaders in Africa, south of the Sahara. I would put him in the top five, not in the last five. So that report is flawed. But it depends on what they were looking for and who they interviewed.
Senior Minister Simon Kayamoyo in President Mugabe's office, who is also ZANU-PF National Chairperson, dismissed Gallup's research findings, saying the organization was working in cahoots with the Obama administration to tarnish the image of the Zimbabwean leader. But this was dismissed by Ruhanya. The research findings were released yesterday when the U.S.-Africa summit meeting opened in Washington, D.C. America snubbed President Mugabe, allegedly for his poor human rights record, together with leaders of three other African nations. The summit is expected to tackle issues related to strengthening political and economic ties between Washington and the rest of Africa. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Thank you, Chiripasi. Just as a reminder, that Live Talk will come later at 8:30 p.m. and our host will discuss events unfolding in the Chingwizi Transit Camp.
Now, a quick recap of today's top stories.
An American research organization ranks President Robert Mugabe among some of the worst leaders in sub-Saharan Africa.
And pandemonium continues at the Chingwizi Transit Camp, where dozens of people clashed with the police.
That's our broadcast for this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night.